Welcome to this deep dive where we sift through the noise to bring you the core insights. Today, we're diving into a recent investor update, not just to see what stocks they're picking, but to really get into the why, you know, understand the thinking behind the moves in, well, today's economy.
Exactly. We've got this document, Investors Update 04.2025 favorite10.pdf.
Right.
It's OSCOB #33 from DHR, dated April 2025. And it really lays out their portfolio, their reasoning.
Yeah.
So our goal here is to pull out the key stuff, the strategy, how they see certain companies, market sentiment, basically give you the essentials without you having to wade through it all.
And hopefully uncover some maybe surprising takes on things like cash valuations.
Yeah, definitely. There are some interesting angles in there.
Okay, let's unpack this then, starting with something pretty fundamental right now, cash. This investor really hammers home the importance of holding cash.
They do. Especially when markets are, you know, choppy like they can be.
Their point is, when things dip, the instinct might be panic, maybe sell. But if you're sitting on cash,
suddenly those lower prices look like, well, opportunities. It flips the script.
It's that psychological edge they talk about. It shifts you from maybe fear to opportunity spotting.
Right.
They even quote something like, only those who invest when prices fall are also there when prices rise. Sort of emphasizes sticking it out.
Staying in the game for the long run. And look, they're putting their money where their mouth is, right?
Totally. They mentioned their cash position is, what, 29%?
Yeah, 29%, which they say is way higher than their usual, like, 10, 20% range. That's significant.
It is. And interestingly, they mention Warren Buffett's high cash levels, too, as sort of a contributing thought.
A bit of validation, perhaps.
Could be. But it's not just about hoarding it. They have a plan.
Exactly. They talk about deploying it gradually, not trying to like perfectly time the bottom, which is impossible anyway.
Right. Just steadily putting it to work. And they mention recent buys.
Yeah. With an expected annual return of 16%.
Yeah.
That tells you something about what they're looking for right now.
High bar. So for you listening, understanding this perspective on cash, the psychology, the strategy, it can really help you frame how you react to market news and volatility.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's look at how the portfolio itself is structured. They break it down into three buckets, Eichen, Motor, and Favoriten.
Eichen, that means oaks in German, right?
Yeah, exactly. They describe these as mostly solid blue chips, good dividend payers, some stable small caps too.
The core holdings.
The core long-term stuff. Expected return around 6, 7% per year. Think stability, longevity.
Got it. Then Motor. Sounds like growth.
That's the idea. Stocks with strong, stable earnings growth. They're aiming for 10% or more per year here. Still long-term, buy and hold.
Okay. And the last one, favorites.
Yep. These are newer picks, maybe based on a business model they like, a new product, or just feeling it's undervalued.
So potentially held for a shorter time.
Could be. Depends on how things play out, how their initial idea holds up.
Now, how are they figuring out these expected returns for the Motor and Favoriten stocks?
Oh, yeah, good point. They use a discounted cash flow method, DCF.
Okay, DCF. So basically projecting future cash flows and working back to a present value.
That's the essence of it. They're basing it on their own 10-year forecasts of free cash flow, or FCF. It shows a, you know, disciplined approach to valuation, not just gut feelings.
And how's it all performing? They give a year-to-date snapshot, right?
They do. And kind of shows diversification in action. As of the update, the Motor and Favoriten categories were mostly in the red for the year.
Damn.
Down, while the Eichen, the Oaks, were holding up better, showing some green.
So the stable core doing its job while the growthier stuff feels the market chop. Makes sense.
Exactly. Okay, let's dive into some specific names. Danaher ticker, DHR. The author asks this great question.
The German one?
Yeah. Der Markt sieht eine Katastrophe, hat es verlösbar. Which is basically, the market sees a catastrophe, I think it's solvable.
That definitely grabs your attention. What's the supposed catastrophe?
Well, they point to two big share price drops for Danaher. One after their full year 2024 report, and another on what they call Liberation Day news about Trump's tariff ideas.
And how big were the drops?
10% each time.
Wow. Okay.
So, yeah, the market clearly wasn't happy. But then you look at the CEO's comments.
Rainer M. Blair.
Right. He's talking about better than anticipated core revenue, solid cash flow, operating margin expansion. Seems pretty positive.
So a disconnect between management commentary and market reaction.
That's what the author highlights. And then there's this other piece, the share buyback.
Ah, yes. How much was it?
Nearly $6 billion. $5.979 billion to be exact.
That's substantial.
It is. And the author notes, Danaher isn't really known for huge, consistent buybacks like this. So they read it as maybe a sign of management confidence, like, we think the stock's cheap.
Hmm. But is there a risk they're just, you know, whistling past the graveyard, the market sold off for a reason? Are they missing something?
That's the key question, isn't it? But the author connects it back to Danaher's big transformation a few years ago. Remember that?
Vaguely, between 2015 and 2018.
Yeah. They sold off a bunch of older, lower margin businesses, environmental, industrial tech, dental, test and measurement.
Right. To focus more on
higher margin stuff, diagnostics, biotechnology, life science. That shift really boosted their overall net profit margin.
Okay, so the underlying business became fundamentally more profitable.
Exactly. And that's why this investor seems to view the recent market reaction as, well, solvable noise rather than a fundamental flaw. They see the stronger core business.
And based on that view, they calculate an expected return.
Yep, 9% per year using their DCF model. They believe the strong free cash flow generation will continue.
They also mentioned something about COVID impacts and spending adjustments.
Just briefly, how biotech and life science revenues went up post-COVID, and then some capital spending adjustments followed. It's all part of the context for the current situation. It's about that longer-term view beyond the headlines. Got it. Okay, moving on. Intuitive Surgical, ISRG. The Da Vinci robots.
The very same. The update shows continued growth, more systems installed, more surgeries being done every year. Plus, the new Da Vinci 5 system is out and selling.
And the business model is heavily based on recurring revenue.
Hugely. 85% of revenue comes from the instruments, the disposables used in each surgery, and the service contracts for the machines.
Which sounds great for stability, but the author flags it as potentially a double-edged sword.
Yeah, that's the phrasing. Because those costs add up for hospitals if it gets too expensive.
They might push back, even with the benefits. What are the benefits, though? They mentioned studies.
They do. For the new Da Vinci 5, its force feedback tech apparently led to, like, 43% less force being put on tissue in preclinical tests.
Which could mean fewer mistakes.
Especially for less experienced surgeons, potentially. And looking more broadly, a big review of studies showed robot-assisted surgery with Da Vinci generally meant fewer complications, less blood loss, shorter hospital stays compared to traditional methods. Those are pretty compelling patient outcomes.
Definitely. But then there's the cost. It's significantly more expensive per procedure.
How much more?
Estimated around $1,500 to $3,000 more than standard laparoscopy.
Oof. That's not trivial.
Not at all. The author makes an interesting analogy, though, to Apple products.
How so?
You pay a premium, but you get perceived quality, precision, user satisfaction. And people still line up for it. Here, the premium buys potentially better patient outcomes and high-tech appeal.
So hospitals weigh the cost against those benefits and the demand. Still, it makes you wonder about that cost pressure long term.
It does. And maybe that plays into the author's valuation. Despite all the growth in tech, their expected annual return from the DCF model is only 3%.
Only 3%? That's quite low compared to the others we've discussed.
It is. And that's why they say they're not buying more shares right now. The price seems to already reflect a lot of the good news.
What's affecting that calculation? They mentioned cash flow factors.
Yeah, things like increased spending CapEx on R&D and expanding internationally. Plus, they also have a big share buyback program running, which uses cash.
Okay.
But they also expect a future harvest phase where margins might improve as things mature and get more efficient. So, potential recognized, but maybe not at this price.
Right. Let's switch gears to Fresenius, ticker FRE. The discussion here seems focused on the CEO, Michael Sen, and meeting expectations.
Yeah, the author tracks how the company performed against forecasts Sen gave back in April and October 2024, looking at things like organic revenue growth and currency-adjusted EBIT.
And how did they do?
Pretty well, actually. Mm-hmm. For the full year 2024, they consistently met or beat their own guidance. EBIT came in at the top end of their 6-10% target range.
And revenue?
Revenue growth beat the 4-7% goal, hitting 8%. So, you know, delivering on promises.
And the market liked that.
Seems so. The stock price was up 16.5% year-to-date, according to the update. That definitely bucks the trend for many stocks over that period. Good results, good communication apparently paid off.
But now their new forecast is more cautious.
A bit, yeah. For the upcoming year, they're guiding for EBIT growth of 3-7% and revenue growth of 4-6%.
Yeah.
Lower ranges than what they just achieved.
Hmm. Under promise and over deliver, maybe?
Could be the strategy. What's interesting is, despite that more cautious guidance, the author has actually increased their own expected annual return for Fresenius.
Oh, To what?
To 16%. They revised their free cash flow estimate upwards.
Why the upward revision if the company guidance is cautious?
Well, they note that Fresenius' past FCF might have looked artificially high because they were holding back on some investments.
Oh, okay.
And there's also the upcoming spinoff of their dialysis unit, FMC. That's going to adjust the balance sheet and likely provide a clearer picture of the core company's finances going forward. So maybe they see underlying strength there.
Makes sense. Okay, nearly there. It's just the short notes section. Quick updates on recent buys.
Right. They mentioned buying Adobe and Airbus.
Okay, Adobe. What's the thinking?
They feel the market's maybe too worried about Adobe falling behind in AI and also the failed Figma deal. So they see it as undervalued.
They think Adobe will catch up on the AI front.
It seems to be the bet.
Yeah.
They see the current price as a good entry point, expecting a 17% annual return.
And Airbus.
Classic duopoly play, right?
Yeah.
Them and Boeing. The author sees Airbus in a stronger position currently.
Better margins.
Yeah. And they also anticipate more defense spending benefiting Airbus over the next decade. So positive FCF outlook there too. Expect a return. 16%.
And then just reiterate the cash position again.
Yep, still at that high 29% level, ready to deploy, presumably.
Okay. So wrapping this all up, in this deep dive, we've really seen this investor's focus on cash as a strategic tool in shaky markets.
Definitely. And we got into the weeds on Danaher seeing potential where the market sees problems.
Right. And the complexities with Intuitive Surgical, great tech, but wow, those costs.
Mm-hmm. Then Fresenius. Delivering results, maybe managing expectations now, but still looking attractive to this investor.
And finally, those new bets on Adobe catching up in AI and Airbus leveraging its market position.
Yeah, this update really gives you that shortcut, doesn't it, into the mindset, the analysis.
Yeah. It
goes way beyond just headlines.
Absolutely. Which brings us to a final thought for you listening. We've heard these different takes on cash, on valuing innovation versus cost, on seeing turnarounds. What parts of this analysis really click with how you think about the market or specific companies?
Yeah, what questions does it spark for your own digging? Something to chew on.
Indeed. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.